We're going to first deal with all of the sexual offences and matters relating to gender-based violence in children. So I'm going to hand over to Advocate Pierre Smith, who is Acting Special Director in the SOCA unit, to take all of those lessons.
Thank you, NDPP, and thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Yes, as the NDPP introduced me, I'm one of the actors in the NPA at present. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the TCC model. Maybe that will give a good explanation to colleagues and members of Parliament and what the model exactly stands for. First of all, the Tutuzela Care Centre model is a rape care facility centre model to have all crucial facilities under one roof. So its main mandate is victim-centred, court-directed, prosecutor-guided investigation, and stakeholder cooperation. The three objectives would be to reduce secondary victimization, to improve the conviction rate, and to have ultimately an holistic service for victims of these offences. Also, for last year, we had 34,558 matters reported at the 55 sites that we have nationally. On the question on the spreadsheet of the sites, we can make that available to members of this committee. And where they are located. They are located in all nine provinces with the spread between urban and rural areas as well. In relation to the CARA funding, it is correct. We requested originally 23 million to be allocated for the particular purpose of the Tutuzela Care Centre model. 16 million was allocated for the TCC specifically. 7.5 million was allocated for the rollout of an additional 5 TCC sites. We've already kick-started the process because I must just explain, having a TCC in place focuses firstly on stakeholder cooperation. You need to get all the relevant stakeholders on board and they must buy into the model. The NPA is merely put in charge for the rollout of this process, but it's a collaboration between all relevant stakeholders. So to do that, we look for instance at the necessity on police stats. What are the stats in a particular area? There should be a balance between rural and urban areas. How many of those cases are on the court roll in relation to being placed on the court roll already? Do we have FCS facilities available? FCS is the specialist unit in SAPS. It stands for Family Violence, Child Abuse and Sexual Offences. So they're the specialists on the SAPS side. We also need to find out, do we have holistic forensic services available at the hospital? Because all these sites are located either in a hospital or on hospital premises. So it's either by means of within the hospital building or by means of a park home that it's being secured. There's a specific process of having those park homes in place as well. As I said, 7.5 million was put into the budget, so to speak, for the rollout of 5 sites. So we started with that stakeholder process. The sites, 7 sites have been identified. The simple reason is because it takes time for all of it to be in place and the procurement processes of in relation to the park homes as well. 5.5 million was allocated or set aside rather for the maintenance of the remaining 55 sites. Now that is a small amount because I'll be honest about it. The rollout of the TCC model and the implementation of it is quite expensive. It's not a cheap model, so to speak. Because of all the costs that needs to be involved and needs to be in place, services and equipment as well. The rest of the money, the 3 million, was allocated between court preparation services to improve the model. Secondly, is to develop an holistic forensic sciences social model to improve the testimony and content of experts to testify in court in relation to all crucial sexual offences or child-related matters. The third part of that was allocated for, or reserved rather, for the experts to be trained. In relation to Honourable Holland's question earlier on, what's the difference between dedicated and specialist prosecutors, I'll talk about that. But that is to improve the level of understanding and expertise of current prosecutors that are dealing with sexual offences so that you have that dedicated services available. On that note, in 2015, we advertised for the appointment of 35 specialist prosecutors, which was in line with DOJ that had a process of 57 sexual offences courts to be rolled out. From that 35 posts, we appointed 28 specialist prosecutors. 7 could not be filled. In the next phase, we were supposed to advertise the remaining 22 plus the 7, in other words, 29. That never could happen. A moratorium was placed on the establishment and the rollout of additional posts because of the budgetary issue. So we only appointed the 28. That doesn't mean that if you're not appointed specifically as a specialist prosecutor, there is not dedicated services. This is why, in relation to what you, the Honourable Member, read in the annual report, is encapsulating the fact that we deal with all specialised services when it comes to prosecutors being trained. So we select prosecutors to be that experts to deal with those cases collectively. But there's also responsibility on the NPA to ensure that all prosecutors are dealing with sexual offences receive the necessary training, and you will get that in Act 32 of 2007 as well. So that is just background information in relation to the TCC model and the specialization. On another note, which I think is quite crucial in relation to many of the questions that were asked, and I'm going to group them all together instead of going to the Honourable Member, because that will make it just easier. We've noted the comments in relation to the seriousness of sexual offences and the vast gap there still is. We're very much aware of that. And ma'am, you would also notice that last week the Stats SA report came out, the Victims of Crime Survey, which indicated there was an increase in 73% to 88%. So it's an increase of 50% of victims that have reported a first report of sexual offences. That's what we want. For the simple reason, we want people to report the matters. This is why we've got vigorous public awareness campaigns also at the TCCs in the rural and urban areas to ensure that people know what their rights are and know how to report these matters and where it should be reported as well. As I said, in relation to the number of matters reported last year at our TCCs, 34,558, it must be noted 90% approximately of them would be on sexual offences. The others would be on domestic violence, child justice or other related matters. So the bulk of those matters are focusing on that. The other concern is that 57% of matters reported at our TCC are with children as victims, which is a huge concern to us. This is why we focus specifically our training on prosecutors to deal with the necessary social context in relation to children and also adult women in this regard. However, after matters being reported at the TCCs, it must be noted the TCCs provide an holistic service. Approximately last year it was 37%, it hovers between 35 to 37% of matters reported on sexual offences. Your adult victim wants services, not necessarily a case to be registered or opened. So immediately there's a huge drop of dockets being investigated by the police that will ultimately come to us. Second point is, you're working on about approximately 20% of all matters that are being investigated by SAPS reported at the DCC, where you will have an unknown assailant or a non-identified offender for many reasons. We've also noticed that those TCC sites that are close to border sites, there's an increase in seasonal workers or mine workers and so forth, and therefore you get a lot of more stranger rapes or stranger offences that are happening at those TCCs versus the ones that are more inland as well, which will also ultimately have a negative, unfortunately, effect on the number of cases that you can ultimately take to court. This is in line with what Honourable Holm also said when he spoke about the Medical Research Council and attrition rate. We're very much aware of the study that Professor Rachel Jukes did where she said the attrition rate for sexual offences hovered at about 8%, 8 to 9%. That is correct. That is taken from cases that have been reported from first instance to ultimately finalised right at the end. But one should remember that there are several interdependencies in between that will ultimately prevent a case from being taken to court. Yes, and we are aware that it is a concern for us as the NPA. This is why we have now recently, as the NDPP said, we're holding hands with SAPS in this regard, and we have a meeting with the National Commissioner and four of these generals also to have a concerted effort holistically to increase the focus of how we're going to deal with these dedicated cases, which will include the cold cases that are going to be revitalized as well. General Linda, that's the national head of FCS, was in contact with me. We still have to meet to set up that meeting to have a vigorous plan in place on how we're going to deal with that. What we did from outside already, and this is a focus area for all DPPs as well, is that sexual offences or gender-based violence, including intimate femicide, femicide, patricide, maritricide, filicide, all those matters, should receive the necessary focus area when we're dealing with them in courts. This is why our training is an ongoing, constant development. And to keep prosecutors into line with the content of training, that training manual is being revised and amended on an annual basis. We're not only doing it for prosecutors. The one for prosecutors that we're doing is an advanced one. So here you work with a prosecutor that's already got expertise as a prosecutor, but you want to create that specific specialized expertise in sexual offences. Then we also have integrated training that we do for stakeholders involved with the DCCs. That's more on a more entry level, to have an understanding about what is expected of each and every role player in dealing with sexual offences, and ultimately have an improved process as well. I see there's an hand of an honourable member. Sorry? Must I proceed? Oh, okay, thank you. So this is sort of like background information in relation to the matter.
I'm just asking Chair that he be precise and not start another presentation, please.
Thank you. So noted. I'll do my best, Chair. Thank you. Thank you. In relation to the question that came out about the responsibility from us on sexual offences courts, remember the NPA plays a support role there. The responsibility of the rolling out of these courts sits with DOJ, not with us. But we play an additional support role there as well. And we must just add, in relation to the presentation by the Chief Justice, for the fact that they were not consulted, we were slightly surprised by it, because we know that regional court presidents and judiciary are actually involved in that process as well, for the setting up and the decision-making process of rolling out these courts as well. I'm not going to answer the question about the conviction rate. I will leave that to my boss to answer that one. Thank you. The conviction rate question, ma'am. The draft regulations. The regulations are being compiled by DOJ, the legislatory section. We have provided extensive inputs into that as well, together with the NGOs. There was a process last year.
Sorry, sir. Just for a record, I think the Chief Justice is the head of the judiciary. The fact that you might have contacted or been part of the meetings where the regional court presidents are present does not take away the responsibility that the head of the judiciary should be informed.
Indeed, sir. Correctly, sir. Thanks. Noted. In relation to the regulations, as I said, they are being compiled by DOJ, the legislative division. We've provided extensive inputs in that regard. The final feedback is that, from what we've heard, that it will be tabled within this financial year. So that's best what we can say in that instance. In relation to the bail process that was also raised after hours, there is an instruction actually in relation to the fact that prosecutors should not, in serious sexual offence matters, so you were talking about your Schedule 1 offences, issue any bail after hours, specifically in that regard, but obviously we can follow it up to see if it's being dealt with to the teaser. Thank you. debriefing for prosecutors. We've got the EWP program specifically in line at NPA that assists with the debriefing of sexual offences prosecutors and all involved in relation to dealing with these cases, which is a huge challenge in that regard. Yeah, court hours, unfortunately, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, as you know, we're not in control of the session of a court. So we contribute to the prosecution of a case, but we can't control necessarily the court hours, and that will also apply for sexual offences as well. I hope, I'm not sure if I doubt if there's any question that I missed. Okay, did I miss something? Or that the filling of vacancies for TCCs, sorry sir, in relation to the TCCs, the vacancies, we have submitted a plan in line with the interim committee that has been set up to deal with the summit that the President had, the Honourable President, last year. So we've submitted the spreadsheet for what the vacancies are and how that should be filled as well. Thank you. I think I'm done for now. I hope I've covered all the questions. If not, then I'm sure it will be specifically raised. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think the honourable members, just before they proceed, there is a likelihood that by two we will not be done with the NPA if we have to do justice. I think the committee secretariat must monitor the time and advise the SIU of such if we take more than it is required, to advise the SIU of such, maybe we might need to go over the time, maybe by 30 minutes or so, because I don't want, I've noted you, Honourable Ladies, I don't want a situation where, because of time constraints, we just gloss over issues. I think let's monitor it. Let's try and stick to the time that has been allocated. But in case we don't, I think the SIU needs to be advised accordingly. But we will have to meet and deal with the SIU today. Because I think we're just a few minutes before one. And we are still very far from finishing, and I would love a situation where honourable members get all their responses to the questions that they have asked before we deal with the issues of recommendations, because I think it's quite clear that certain divisions might need to come back and deal with some matters in detail, but let's hear their responses. I just wanted to indicate that.
Honourable Bates. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We asked many questions, and some of the members have now indicated that while the replies of Mr. Smith were long, they were important detail that the members need. So perhaps you can ask the entire to reply in writing to all of our questions. And that will give them sufficient time to interrogate the questions properly, and it will enable us to get the kind of detail that we're looking for. As long as there's a time limit on when the replies will be provided, it can't be on a senior year basis.
Can we also look at how other divisions are proceeding, so that if we have to, which I think that will be the final recommendation, but let's look at how other divisions are responding to the questions. But we take note of what we have raised. Honourable Chair.
No, I agree, Chair, with that, except to say that I don't think there's an expectation that each division must take 30 minutes to respond. And so they also need to fine-tune their responses. Areas where there's detail, we can get those, but precise and to the point will be very much helpful, but the start was not as good as that.
Uh, I think also on our side, I think it will be important that next time when we deal with NPD, we must allocate them the whole day. Because I really do think that we need to interact with them more. For instance, on issues of high-profile corruption cases, I'm still very much interested, like Advocate Mlaudi is, on the high-profile corruption cases in the private sector. We would need to get a list of those progress that is being made. So I do think that we need a lot of time. I think we must take that into consideration when we meet with the NPA the next time. NTPP, buying of 4,000 computers, 65 million, is it the efficient use of resources?
Chair, would you like me to take that one now? I'll put it into the basket. I think one of the biggest issues in the justice system has been the IJS and being more, you want to be more efficient, we have to move with technology. People say we're in the fourth industrial revolution. I sometimes wonder if the justice system, we actually reached the third. So we really need to up our game if we want to be efficient. I'm going to hand over to Advocate de Kok, who will just deal very crisply with the issue of court hours, which is important. Yes, and the issue of prosecution of failure to disclose, to submit tax returns.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. Thank you. In relation to the court hours, this is a collective responsibility of all court users. But I think we need to emphasize that point. The MPA participates in the functioning of the criminal justice system and bring cases, criminal matters, to courts. But of course, courts manage many other cases.
I think people at the back there are interested in hearing your responses. If you can speak to your director, to your mic.
Thank you, Chair. So the MPA deals with the criminal cases brought to the courts, but of course, courts deal with many other matters, including civil litigation. And the court users are the legal profession, the legal aid. Of course, the witnesses have a role to play, and the Department of Justice, as far as the administration of the courts, have a critical role to play. Ultimately, the judiciary takes responsibility for the management of the courts and for the management of the court hours. But all of these court users contribute to the effective utilization of the court time. And so that is where we come in as the MPA in criminal matters to ensure that when a case is allocated, when time is allocated for a trial, that the state is ready to proceed with those cases. So in relation to the ultimate utilization of the court hours, and currently in the lower courts, I think that the average was given as 3 hours, there's a number of factors that contribute to that. Sometimes it is the defense who requests postponements on a given date after the trials have been allocated. And that becomes, quite often, that is a reason given in a court why a matter can't proceed. We have sometimes challenges with investigations not being adequately done, and that impacts on the utilization of court time. There is often a problem with witnesses not being at courts on the allocated dates that impacts on whether a case can be finalized. And of course, as part of the planning, often the challenge is how long, how much time has been allocated to a case on a given trial date. Because sometimes things go wrong in terms of how we manage cases in our courts. We sometimes don't know how long a witness will be held in court, how quick that evidence will be finalized, and these all impact on the utilization of the court hours. So what have we done? So we have structures in the system. Under the leadership of the judiciary,
that looks at how do we effectively manage the court time. And so from a case flow management point of view, this becomes important. And so in each province, we have a judge president who takes ultimate responsibility with the heads of court. And the heads of court would be the chief magistrates of the districts and then the regional court presidents. With all the other role players, including the MPA, where we sit collectively around the table on a monthly basis to look at the challenges in terms of how we're managing our court time. And so this is the place really where we should be bringing and where we do bring, where there are serious issues that impact on the effective use of the time. So the point is just, Chair, again, to go back to where we started to say collective responsibility. These issues are being addressed on a daily basis, but there are a number of factors that impact on the effective utilization of the time.
I think we do understand that.
I'll move to the next point. On the failing to submit tax returns, this is of course a concern to the prosecution, and because of the concern and the importance that the MPA attaches to this work, we have specialist prosecutors in each director of public prosecution's office that works very closely with the South African Revenue Services in terms of looking at offences that are committed in terms of the SARS Act and referrals by the SARS to the MPA. So currently under the leadership of the NDPP, senior people in the MPA have been looking at a new memorandum of understanding with the SARS. A lot of work has been done. I think it's largely almost 100% complete. We will have a new process in terms of how we manage collectively with the SARS all these kinds of cases, including those cases where citizens fail to submit tax returns. One of the challenges that have arisen in terms of these matters is the definition of the offence. The Tax Administration Act has been amended to introduce intent as an element of this offence. And so that is a challenge that has arose recently. The MPA has made submissions to the SARS Commissioner to look at an amendment to the Act. Because before, negligence was sufficient to prove this offence. So if someone doesn't submit, they have the responsibility. They cannot say, I forgot about, they will be convicted. They would have been convicted. But when you introduce an element of intent, someone can now say, no, but I've left this in the hands of my bookkeeper, and my bookkeeper failed to submit on time, and therefore you cannot hold the taxpayer responsible in a criminal court. So that is a bit of a challenge, but the point is that these cases are receiving priority attention from the prosecution, and we do our best to ensure that they are prosecuted on a daily basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to hand over to Advocate Karen van Rensburg, who will deal with just a quick issue of the witness protection and one or two HR issues that were raised.
Good afternoon. I'll deal firstly with the 10 suspensions, the question whether Mkhwebe and Jibar are included. No, they're not included because they were not suspended. They were on special leave. If you would like the costing of that, we can supply that. I don't have it with me. In terms of the 20 million rand that was asked for the ID, where is the money coming from for the specialist or the council that's going to be appointed? It is part of the ID's budget, and it's not going to be spent in 1 year. It's over a period of time. So it is currently within the 38 and the new money that we'll be asking for in the NTS period. Question about the FINCA. Court date is the 5th of December 2019 for instructions from her counsel. There's also a disciplinary matter. She's been served with a charge sheet, and the date is 21 October 2019. Closely monitoring those matters because, as you say, been in the media for a long time, and we need to get finality on that. The question about the discipline and the number of members that did not disclose, these are not SMS members, they are MMS members. It was a new process, so people were still getting used to it, so we had a lower compliance rate than we would like to, and these matters are being dealt with through progressive discipline. It's not a hearing that is required. in terms of the question around EWP, whether this includes members that are acting at the moment. EWP services are anonymous to protect the person, allow him to report family issues, etc., financial issues, without him being concerned about possible victimization or use of that information. So I cannot answer you on whether it is or not, other than to tell you from what unit they emanate. In terms of the witness protection, I'll just briefly deal with those issues. The jail terms will fluctuate because it depends on the court cases. So when the case is finalized, you might have a big case with a lot of counts. Therefore, you'll have more life sentences or longer periods of jail. Other times, you'll have less cases, and sometimes you won't have any finalized in that period. So it fluctuates. The question about the witness that is in a political violence matter, I don't have the detail of that. I'm not sure whether the person applied. We are busy looking into it, and I will provide a report in respect of that person or whether he did apply to be admitted onto the program and why we did not. Witnesses walking off the program is a challenge for us. I'm sure that you are aware of the fact that the fees that are paid or the allowances back date to 2003, and it's only 750 rand per month for a single person, and it's really very low rate, and it's difficult conditions. You're not allowed contact with your family, your friends, etc. So we have walk-offs, but we do follow up on those walk-offs, and those people do testify. It's not a criminal charge to walk off, and we therefore do not proceed to charge them with anything.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to deal with the other matters instead of categories. The first issue that was raised, or that I will deal with, is the issue of engaging with the Minister on the status of the NPA with regard to the separate entity, and I think it was raised by two of the Honourable Members. This is very much on the table. I've discussed it with the current Minister. He is in principle supportive of it and has asked that we actually present him with the proposals. We are, I had mentioned, let me mention now, within the office of the NDPP, part of what we are doing is setting up a strategic support and innovation capacity in order to look at how can we deal with, amongst other things, certain key issues that are facing the NPA, like the issue of the status vis-a-vis the Department of Justice. And so we are looking at, as you know, various other, you know, prosecution officers, how they deal with it, comparative studies. And so we are, you know, looking at it in quite an in-depth fashion, and we'll send a proposal to the Minister fairly soon. And the same applies to the accountability and mechanism. There was a question about integrity and accountability. And within the NPA, we are looking to, the NPA Act allows for the creation of an accountability, an ethics and accountability mechanism, a structure, a capacity. So we are doing this same strategic support and innovation unit is looking at work that was already done on this, and we are looking to establish some kind of, you know, I think Advocate Hoffmeyer has often sort of lamented the fact that for the NPA, we don't have like an iPad. You know, so I don't know whether we want to go that far, but we certainly are looking into ways in which the NPA, we can ensure that when there are allegations of misconduct, that it is properly addressed and persons are held accountable. I should perhaps mention right at the outset that this presentation was not intended to present a plan. It was looking at the past year's performance of the NPA, which, you know, the previous national director, so we presented it in that way. I threw in little bits and pieces about what looking forward-looking, but because that was not the plan, we didn't do that. But we are very, very happy to come and report to this committee about all of what has happened in 8 months, all of the plans in place, and what are we doing to address various internal and external challenges that face the organization. On the conviction rate, which was raised, I agree completely. I've been going on a roadshow around to prosecutors and saying to them that we cannot sit back and think conviction rates are, you know, we tick the box 90% and then what are we achieving when we do get these high conviction rates? And the point was made by one of the Honourable Members that, yes, when you compare conviction rates to the number of reported cases, it is shockingly low. Shockingly low. And the police have these statistics, but I think it is sitting at under 10%, and I think that might even be a sort of generous estimate. But so when you're looking at the number of violations versus convictions, if it's that low, then there's something seriously wrong in the system. So we in the NPA have committed to, we don't have the answers yet, but we committed to re-looking at what else can we actually put in place to ensure that we are really measuring the right things and that we are, in doing so, really addressing the crime problem in South Africa. So one of the things that we have been doing is engaging with the police to look at something like joint measures. It's never been joint measures with police before, but we are already exploring the idea of having joint measures and not police looking at numbers of arrests, we look at conviction rates, and everyone thinks they're doing fabulously, but at the end of the day, the crime rate is not being affected at all. So I must confess, though, that the issue, yes, the Chief Justice did criticize that as well, or say it's not the best measure. We agree. But there are certain issues, though, that we need to bear in mind in this, is that prosecutors are lawyers for the people, and that we do have a victim-centered approach. And therefore, part of our work is trying to strive for a conviction, but not at all costs. You know, it's not like we're going to, you know, the interests of justice are not going to be served. We must work in the interests of justice. But we are in an adversarial society, system. We're not in a civil system where the prosecutor simply places all the evidence before a judge and says, okay, you decide on whether we should convict or not. We actually have to, you know, otherwise, what is the point of the investigation? So we've got to find that balance. Conviction rate is still an important issue for the prosecution, but we need to look at other measures that are actually talked to impact and not just, numbers. Processes regarding the TRC and old cases, that was raised. What we did earlier this year is, yes, there are certain high-profile, should I say, inquest matters that have been reopened primarily because family have had the means to do that and to get counsel to do it, and they've pushed the system. What we've done is in the PCLU, which actually manages these cases, is we've looked at all of the deaths in the detention. We said we should not only be looking at those families that have the means to push the process. And it was one of the reasons why I actually delayed one of these inquests, because we had found another death in detention a couple of months later in the same detention center of police cells. I mean, how many cases can you have where a person slips on soap and dies, or a person is found hanging? So we are looking at how we can actually deal with all of those other deaths in detention as well as a start. We had a meeting just last week very quickly with lawyers representing the families of many that died in detention, and we are together with them, prosecutors, a number of prosecutors, academics, lawyers, we're looking at how could we actually be more innovative in trying to use international criminal law as well to actually hold those most responsible at a high level for atrocities committed during the apartheid era. So that is something that process just started last week, and we hope that we will be able to move forward with that. On the issue of the vacancies, yes, the vacancies have had a serious effect on morale. What we've done now, because we've had this, you know, the situation where we've had an AE&E allocation, which you need to spend in 6 months, the head of administration together with HR has come up with a plan to ensure that we recruit very fast so that we are able to spend this money in this period. That has already, just the very fact that we are recruiting has been a huge morale booster in the NPA. We started off with an internal advertisement so that we allow prosecutors, and it is initially we're focusing on prosecutors, not administration, and that is why one of the administration is particularly high. It's not a reflection of, you know, lack of leadership, etc. We have deliberately decided that we will, certain key administrative positions will be filled at this point, but we have to focus on the prosecution to start off, and that is why that figure is a bit hard. But we have a recruitment plan, and we're hoping that we'll be able to recruit internally first to give people an opportunity to be promoted, etc., because that has also been the source of demotivation, and it's immediately going to be followed by an external advertisement so that we can get much needed more numbers into the NPA. Acting post is also a reflection of this situation, and it must be remembered that all of those in these acting positions are not getting an acting allowance for this, and you know, so there are certain advantages, but that is the position with regard to the, because of the budgetary situation. On the higher level posts, the DPPs and the special directors, with the DPPs, I can announce that there will be one appointment that will be made fairly soon. There have been, you know, you're aware that there were 5 appointments that were made prior to my taking office last year, and there's litigation in that regard, so we are trying to look at what the possibilities are to actually appoint in those acting positions, notwithstanding the litigation that is ongoing. And just to mention, there was a question by another member that at the high levels in terms of the DPP positions, I don't see a sort of that this is having an impact on the morale of the acting DPPs at that level. With regard to the fees must fall, the minister's tweet, and whether it will impact on the morale of prosecutors. I should say that the new minister has, we work very closely together. He is very, very committed to the independence of the NPA and also to supporting the NPA in terms of the necessary resources and other support that the executive can give to the NPA. So, you know, this is not something that the minister hasn't mentioned previously. But as far as the prosecutors are concerned, we know that notwithstanding in some instances, you know, what the executive might do, we need to do what we have to do. And with regard to the fees must fall, there was a very, this matter was, I mean, it was before my time, but my colleagues advised me that there was a plan, the prosecution looked at, there were a number of students that were arrested, and many of the less serious offences were withdrawn, and it was only the more serious ones that we proceeded to prosecution. I mean, students have to behave responsibly in the sense that you cannot burn libraries or try to burn a police car with people in it. You know, so these are serious cases, so this will have to be looked at, but as far as prosecutors are concerned, we will continue to do what we have to do. With regard to the issue of you know, extradition for some of the matters that were raised, Bob Roth, Tenenbaum, we're certainly looking at that, and I will make sure that that matter gets attention and that there's some traction there, because I know these are old cases. These people have left a long time ago, and we must really do what we can to try to bring them back. If we fail, we fail, but at least there should be a process in terms of what we need to do. The OSD contingency plan, yes, that is that is going to have a serious impact. The court decision, what was just this morning, is going to have a serious impact on the NPA. But we will look at the judgment and consider how best to address the matter now. But that is an urgent matter that will require careful consideration of the judgment and then a plan in terms of how we deal with this. The issue of the lawyer that was struck off the roll who admitted to have taken a bribe to detriment of his client. Again, we will look into that and we'll give you feedback on that case. The issue of, I think we've talked about, the issue of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the key one being a case in the asset forfeiture space, which is the Phillips matter, which is still subject to litigation. This is one of the real bane in the NPA. I must be frank and honest about it. It is a real problem. We have to look at why this happened, look at lessons learned, whether there's any disciplinary steps that need to be taken, we'll have to look at. But this is a matter that's still the subject of litigation. But just to let you know, we're trying to find a resolution in this matter as soon as possible. We've appointed new counsel, and we hope that we will be able to find a resolution. But that is really something that should never happen. In the NPA. with regard to the issues of the appointment of the council in the where's the notes on that, in the investigating directorate, there were two members raised this, or maybe more. There were basic criteria for the selection of this. Basically, we needed to find senior counsel who would be respected by prosecutors in terms of their work that they do in the criminal law space. They have been allocated to certain teams. Also, we looked at counsel that had a certain degree of knowledge with regard to some of these matters, because they had been involved in different ways prior to these matters being declared by the directorate. So knowledge of matters was very important. Their skills and qualifications, for example, the years of experience as a senior counsel. We looked at the issue of representativity and value for money, because the rates that they've given us are not the usual senior counsel rates, so we have received it, received their services at reduced rates. The issue of it was raised, the cleanup from the top. You know, what is being done to ensure that, the issue was raised about the fact that, you know, there were attempts to convince Parliament that there was nothing wrong in the NPA, but we know that there was a lot that was going on that was wrong in the NPA. You know, you raised the question, why did they not prevent the erosion of the NPA? The reality is, at this point, is that I'm looking at certain key matters, and there are processes that have been put in place. I don't want to say anything more about it in this public forum. But also to understand that there are certain issues. When you're trying to build a credible, when you try to build an institution, you have to work with what you have. And so there may be, yes, we can ask the question, why did people not, you know, do things to prevent the erosion of the NPA? But that's not a reason for dismissing people. So we have to look at, you know, the more serious cases are being looked at. There's a process, and hopefully I will be able to report a little more the next time we come before this committee. The issue of dealing with people with disabilities in the same way as we dealt with the language issues, I agree that's a really important issue. We raised the issue of lack of foreign language interpreters as one of the challenges that is faced in the court system. But it must be clarified that the issue of getting foreign language interpreters is the Department of Justice function. And so, you know, it is a challenge to us. And also the issue of enabling an environment where people with disabilities are able to actually better procure services, and that these issues are taken into account, is certainly an issue for the Department of Justice. But I must quickly add that for us as the NPA, we also need to understand how we engage with people with disabilities, and need to ensure that our processes and our approach, that we have policies perhaps dealing with these issues. And I agree, you know, good relationship. The fact that I mentioned SAPS only doesn't, please do not take that as meaning that there aren't engagement with many, many, many different other role players. And certainly looking at organizations that deal with people with disabilities is something that we must also consider in the future. The issue of the parole, as you know, the NPA has little or no role to play in the parole system. So again, here, the NPA it doesn't demoralize us. We have to ensure that we do what we do that serves the interests of justice in line with the Constitution, and that, you know, those that should be convicted at the end of the day are convicted. We do get the opportunity to submit comments on any legislative developments that there may be in the space, and to that extent we can try to influence it, but that is the extent of which we can do that. Am I correct? The issue of building of the courts and infrastructure that was raised, this is something, again, that falls within the mandate and scope of the Department of Justice, and there's really nothing that the NPA can do about this. But I think what I should do is take the opportunity to highlight that in my regional visits, speaking to prosecutors, many of them have complained bitterly about the lack of infrastructure, the poor conditions under which they are required to work. And understanding that also it's the people that come to court to receive the services also, you know, are exposed to that. So I know that there is an infrastructure committee that is headed up by the Chief Justice. There is a National Efficiency Enhancing Committee headed up by the Chief Justice that has an infrastructure subcommittee, which if I'm not mistaken is headed up by Judge Malambo, and they are looking at the issue of infrastructure. And just last week there was a meeting, and our minister, public service minister, was there, and she indicated that there may be some underspending with regard to infrastructure development in the Department of Justice, and so we are putting forward projects that could, in the short term, be dealt with to deal with the infrastructure problem, which is definitely an issue, and we would appreciate some kind of support in trying to address that, particularly when it comes to the prosecutors, who very often are at the end of the queue. The issue of citizens not understanding processes, I will leave that to Bulelwa Makeke, our communications head. The issue of the independence of the NPA vis-a-vis the judiciary, which was raised by one of the members, this has been an issue for a long time. The way the courts were built, the infrastructure, was that the prosecutor's office was next to the magistrate. And so I agree with you, you know, in terms of the perception of independence. You know, it shouldn't be like the prosecutor and the magistrates are a team, you know. You've got to have them. I know, you know, of late with the new courts that are coming up, there is certainly an attempt to try to make that clear and to have that sort of physical division so that there's no perception. But again, that is something we can input into as we move forward. But for now, I agree there's work that needs to be done on that moving forward. I think we've done with the witness protection issue. The SABC cases were raised. We are actually reporting on to SCOPA on that tomorrow. I have got the list of, I think there are about 12 cases, and I've got exactly what's happened with each one of them. If I could send that in writing, if that's okay, to the committee, or if you listen tomorrow to our SCOPA presentation, you'll hear exactly what's happening with those cases. On the Steinhoff matter, this is, yes, one of the big key investigations that the Hawks and the prosecutors are working very closely on. There have been, I mean, what I can say is, without, I've got to think about this because it is a public forum. There have been proposals by the joint team, the investigators and the prosecutors, about certain steps that can be taken in the shorter term, but we are just putting together a review team to make sure that is the right way we should proceed at this stage. There is a fair amount of work happening, but we need to be satisfied, the head of the Hawks and myself, that we are actually have moved sufficiently forward so that this is not seen as not addressing the big problem. But on the other hand, we talk about low-hanging fruits. So we need to look at what is that balance we need to strike. Do we go with certain low-hanging fruits, or do we investigate a bit longer and approach it? So that is, but there's certainly progress on that matter. I dealt with the top lawyers, but the issue of the 20 million allocation was also raised. Just to say that this is part of what we received during the AE&E allocation. It's for the three-year term looking forward, so it's not just for this year. The political killings in KwaZulu-Natal, this is certainly a top priority both for the NPA and the SAPS. The National Commissioner of Police and myself went down to KZN a couple of weeks ago and sat down with the team of investigators, the task team that's there, as well as the prosecutors that are there. There were challenges raised also with regard to the dedicated capacity of the prosecutors. What we've done is we've actually, now all of these cases are being managed by the organized crime component within the NPA, and we have a steering committee that's been set up at the national office between SAPS and NPA to ensure that these cases get priority, that they're properly managed, And it is so, just to give you the assurance that we don't need external counsel for these kinds of cases, because they are murder matters. They're not complex commercial claim cases, but they are very important and a high priority, and we put in place measures between SAPS and us to ensure that they are prioritized. The issue of MLAs and the challenges with this, I agree. I mean, if you don't get the accused, you won't be able to proceed with the prosecution generally. We are having particular difficulties with regard to MLAs that went to India and the United Arab Emirates. And we do have a treaty with India, and not with the Emirates, but although from our side, our country has done everything that we need to do, but we are looking to, it needs to be, the process on the other side has not been forthcoming, but the minister himself has been involved, and we are at the highest level trying to ensure that we're able to get better cooperation, and if there are specific challenges, that if they are identified, so that from our side we do whatever we can. With regard to the private funding issue, this has come up several times, and we have responded even in public with regard to this. I think, Colin, you have some additional figures, though. I think you had written something. Did you find that note for me? But just to mention again that the issue of private or donor funding is not something that's new. It is something that has been many, many government departments have actually, projects in government departments have been supported through private funding. The Specialized Commercial Crimes Courts in the NPA, well, not in the NPA, in the justice system, were actually set up almost exclusively by funding from Business Against Crime, and that is one of the good practices. The Tutuzela care centers were set up almost exclusively by donor funding, and so with regard, in line with that, we will continue to responsibly access private funding to ensure that it meets all treasury regulations, that we're absolutely transparent about it, and that these funds are private. And the NPA, as the minister has said publicly, has already received funding for the setting up of the strategic support and innovation capacity in the office of the NDPP at the moment to look at, as I said, intractable problems in the criminal justice system. It's got nothing to do with prosecutions. We're trying to introduce innovation into the NPA to ensure we can deal with a whole range of challenges in the NPA as well as in the system. This money has also allowed us to get one of the leading experts on prosecutorial reform to be seconded to the office of the National Director to be able to guide us with his expertise in terms of how we could deal with some of these huge challenges that are facing the criminal justice. We cannot be under any illusions about the fact that the NPA has massive problems internally, but the criminal justice system has huge problems. Some might say it's even, you know, dysfunctional at many levels. So we really, all of this is being used to try to enhance efficiency in the system and for looking at processes unrelated to the prosecution of cases. And bearing in mind the very constrained environment that we work on at the moment, we actually need the support to be able to do these other issues outside of our core business of prosecuting. The issue of, and then I come to the final questions. I think the proposals, the leadership crisis we've talked about, that is, I mean, it's public knowledge about what the issues have been in the NPA. As I said, the plan, I haven't talked about what has happened to deal with that, because that was not what we thought we'd be here to do, but there's a lot that, many plans that we were, I'm repeating myself, so I don't want to do that, but we're happy to come and report on that. The issue of the DPPs, the structural issues, this is not a new thing, it has just been misunderstood. And it's important for the country to understand this, that directors of public prosecutions in terms of the NPA Act are the ones that make decisions to prosecute or not to prosecute, not the national director. The national director can, if he or she thinks that there have been, perhaps a policy has not been complied with, ask that that matter be forwarded to the National Director for review, or the National Director can review cases that other, well, whoever, members of public, ask that a particular decision be reviewed, and that's what some cases, we're in the process of doing some of that. But I think it's very important to understand, and perhaps part of the challenge of the past has been that too many decisions got pulled up to national office. And, you know, the national director has got to be careful not to actually jump into the arena of the DPP space. And so in as much as you can guide, and of course they are accountable, I've made it clear to DPP, is one of them who's sitting here, Advocate de Kock, that this is, you take decisions and I won't interfere, but you had to make sure that these decisions are firmly in line with the evidence that you have, in line with the Constitution and our values, and that they can be supported as decisions that a rational and competent DPP will take. So that is really important to understand that distinction. It's not a structural issue. It is what the law requires in terms of the NPA Act. The issue of, I think I've addressed the 8-month issues. We'll present a plan. The media, the money, that the issues raised with regard to Agnes Cronier's, the money that has been spent with regard to her. I'll give you the figures in a moment. I just want to emphasize, you know, a couple of things in this regard. You know, firstly, that Agnes Cronier has been, well, firstly, the accommodation, it said luxury accommodation. I just want to make it very clear that she's staying in accommodation where if you walk in there, you probably only see government officials. And it is at a hotel in Pretoria. I don't want to say too much because there's also security issues, but it's at government rates, all above board. And, you know, I think we must make it, you know, the issue of her traveling between Cape Town and Pretoria, it has to be understood that she was appointed, she is a mother with 2 young children. And I can tell you this much, I know what it's like from personal experience, having done the King Commission in Cape Town 20 years ago and having 2 young children in Durban that I needed to deal with at the time. So she's actually taken on this position at great personal sacrifice. And so it's not easy. And I know the impact that this is having on her. As far as the spending, the accommodation is what's nothing luxurious about it. She's not flying business class. And, you know, in fact, her security detail has not yet been finalized, and that's something I'm trying to deal with. So she has a driver and a car at the NPA, and so, you know, people raise these issues. There's nothing. It's all above board, and if anything, we actually owe her more than what she's given the circumstance. Accommodation costs $106,000, flights $144,900, and the car is $64,000. The total cost at the moment is $304,900. And she's also being paid a lot less than she was getting in private sector. But that's not an issue. We must make sure as the NPA we do things above board and that we do things properly and very transparent manner. So that's with regard to Advocate Cronier. And then there were a whole lot of issues that were raised with the Honourable Member on the annual report. Yes, the forward is financial constraints is certainly not the only one. You know, it's a bit of an anomaly because I had to do a forward to an annual report that I had nothing to do with. No. So I was trying to, you know, and at the same time trying to motivate prosecutors. So that is why there's also a bit of a disclaimer at the end. But your points are very well made. We will go back and look at the details that you asked us with regard to some of the with regard to all of the different pages, and we will submit you input on that. But just to let you know that your points that you make also with regard to how the wording and how things are structured, you know, saying the person is a wife, that's not acceptable, and we should actually be more careful about how we phrase it. So all of those points are well made. We will respond to you. We take note and we will certainly respond. The issue of the buyment of $150 million, I'm going to ask perhaps Herr Hanika to deal with it, but you know it's certainly not, I cannot say up front, it's not an issue of bad planning. It's an issue of us not having money to deal, to do what we have to do, but still having to deliver a service. So, Hanika, maybe you can just talk quickly to that. The fact that vacancy rate in the administration is high, I talked to that, so I will not deal with that. Before I hand over to Hanika to deal with the last point, I just want to make sure, oh no, that was something that Karen dealt with. Okay, Hanika, just quickly on that.
Okay, thank you, NDPP. The 150 million environment was done within the environment rules, within the 8% rule, as per the PMMA, because if you look at Program 4 within the big Department of Justice budget, we did comply with the rules. Now, the shortfall was due to budget cuts that we did have from National Treasury in prior financial years. So our budget was reduced, but we still have contractual obligations. So we did the expenditure in very close monitoring with the Department of Justice. So everything we did in consultation with them to ensure that we don't enter into unauthorized expenditure. Thank you.
It is one issue of communication that Bulawayo Makeke will deal with.
A very short NDPP. There's no arguing against the fact that there's a whole lot of public awareness and education required, and we do take that on board, and we do that. I also admit that it can never be adequate or enough because, you know, the entire country actually needs a constant education, public awareness. And we try and do as much. We have Ease and Bezos, we do publications that are in different languages, and we send to all, all the things that are possible for us to do, we do. Also using public prosecutors who actually sometimes have to not attend court and actually do this. So it's a very difficult thing to actually try and get to the entire country with the education, but we do it as much as possible. We actually have a Facebook and Twitter pages that also add to the platforms that we can use to reach people, but we do a whole lot of the prosecutors also, DPP offices, have programs, schools outreach programs. We do a lot of public awareness around the Tutuzela care centers where actually prosecutors again go out to the public. So in as much as we do a lot, I don't know if it will ever be adequate or enough, but we continue to do all the events that we can. It's worse now because then we don't even have budget. At some point when we had budget, I think about 80% of our communication budget went to these activities to try and, you know, we had TV series. We had a lot of events, huge events that we did to try and do this. Now we don't have budget. It's actually even less, but we do try. Thank you.
Yeah, one other last issue that was raised was the communication of decisions, like the Life Issue Dimeni case, which is a very high-profile case. I agree completely that just simply stating there was insufficient evidence, that we need to explain a bit more so that there's an understanding about why the decision was taken, because it was a very public matter. So we will work on that, and that point is well made. Chair, that ends our responses, unless there's anything further you would like us to deal with.
Thank you very much, NDPP, and to your team. I think what we will do, we will, together with the Secretariat and the Committee, go through the questions that we think might not have been answered and communicate to yourselves so that you can get written replies to those questions, because we want that the next engagement with yourselves, we now focus on your plans, your medium to long-term plans. But what we'll also be focusing on is, in case you do brief outside counsel, there is a huge concern generally by the legal profession, one, of briefing the known culprits, even if it's black lawyers, but they know, but we would want to have a talent that is going to be scouted as wide as possible. To, for instance, in the cases you are referring to, in the case of the assistance to the investigative directorate, you have briefed all male lawyers, I think there are four. correct me if I'm wrong, that would not be acceptable. Generally, it would not be acceptable. We would want the affirmation of female lawyers also within the bar. And there seems to be an unfair advantage of the Johannesburg or the Gauteng bar and the Cape bar. We would want a situation where other societies, especially from your far rural provinces, to be reflected in how we brief advocates. But I think that will form part of your medium plans, that we agree that you would need a presentation. You have had time to do the diagnosis. We would be much more interested now, what is the plan? I'm not sure whether November Janji would be feasible, because we have to deal with the appointment of the deputy public protector, so our schedule is quite tight. But I think it would be an ideal situation to have you before we adjourn. But we would look at the feasibility. We'll look at the feasibility of that, so that when we meet, we would need a more time to engage on the plans. Because as much as you complain about money now, the other complaint you would have when the economy takes off, and there's a lot of briefings. There are a lot of briefings for lawyers, for advocates. You will have an exodus of people joining the bar. Generally, because sometimes I think there is also a perception that people always view the prosecution authority as a training for the bar. Once they have gained sufficient experience, then they join the bar. So that should also form part of your plans, that when there is no money, you have a lot of people to recruit from, but you do not have money to recruit them. When there is money, then you have an exodus of people that you have trained. What is going to be the retention strategy? I think these are some of the issues that we would need to engage, really engage. I was looking at the University of Stellenbosch. They have a nice program, which is BA, which is Bachelor of Accounting LLB, which might be a good program for commercial prosecution. Although most of the people who would do it would want to be in private practice, but I think to what an extent are you engaging with the universities in terms of your needs as the MPA? But I think we will meet very soon. We'll strive for November or before December. But in case we are not able to, I think early next year we will have to meet with you to discuss your plans. But thank you very much. I think those were fruitful engagements. We can say that a lot is happening. Okay.
Just one point on the council. I just got Advocate Cronier's notes here, and there were five junior counsel that were appointed females as well. But we need to look at, as I said, with senior counsel as well, criminal experience, etc. But your points are all well made, and we will take them on board.
Very good. Very good. So we would meet as soon as our schedule allows, so that we can discuss the plans. Because all the entities that will be appearing before us, we will be prioritizing the issue of the briefing patterns. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much. Thank you, John, for members.